Okay, we start with the Mishnah on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Mishnah says, Lo Yerbilo Lo Nashim, Ela Shmonaser. That he can only have up to 18 wives. When it says Lo Yerbilo Nashim in the Pasuk, he can have 18. Rabbi Udomer, Rabbehulo, Uvaj, Lo Yehe, Misiro Tudibo. He can have as many as he wants, as long as he does not, they do not take him off the Derech Hashem, because the Pasuk, that's what they, in describing the reason for not having too many wives, it says so, that they won't take the king off the path of Hashem. Shimon Omer, afilu achat misirat libo, even one who takes him off the path, harizeh lo yisena, then he can't marry her. In kein lama ne'amar lo yirbeh lo nashim. So what does it mean that you can't have so many wives? If even only one that takes him off the path is not allowed, then why do you have to tell me a limit on the number of wives? That's to tell you, even if they're as great as Avigayo, still can't have more than 18. So, Gemara's going to ask this in a second, but here it's clear. Rabbi Shimon, who generally is Doresh time of the Kra, he looks at the explanation of why a mitzvah is given. Over here, it seems that his shita is reversed with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda here seems to be Doresh time of the Kra, and Rabbi Shimon seems to want to be not be Doresh time of the Kra, and that's what the Gemara is going to ask the Memra. So Rabbi Yehuda Doresh time of the Kra. So this, it seems like Rabbi Yehuda is Doresh time of the Kra. Rabbi Shimon lo Doresh time of the Kra. Vayibcha shmina lehu. We know just the opposite from them. The Tanya, we have a bright Talmud. Benchi aniya, benchi ashirai, memashkinota. A widow, you're not allowed to take a mashkon from a widow, whether she's a wealthy widow or a poor widow. Shenemar lo tachbo beged almana. Says explicit pasuk, you're not allowed to take a mashkon from a widow. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no differentiation. A widow is a widow. There's nothing to talk about. Rabbi Shimon omer ashira memashkinota aniya in memashkinota. If it's a wealthy widow, you can take a mashkon. If it's a poor widow, you may not take a mashkon. But chayav lagzir la, and you are have to return it to her. But masiyah shem rabbi shkenuta, and then you cause her to have a bad name amongst her neighbors. Ramina and my kamar. What does this mean? What is Rabbi Shimon saying? Hachi kamar mitoch shata memashkena. Since you take the mashkon from her, ata chayav lagzir la, you are obligated to return it to her. But masiyah shem rabbi shkenuta. So what did Rabbi Shimon say? Rabbi Shimon says the problem with taking a mashkon from a widow is the fact that you're going to have to return it. Where is the case where you're going to have to return it? That's by a poor widow. A wealthy widow, you don't have to return the item because she has plenty of which to live with. The mashkon you can keep and you won't have to go back and forth to her house. As opposed to that, a poor widow who does not have a beged, the beged almanah, she doesn't have what to sleep in, or she doesn't have what to wear during the day. Each day you're going to have to take the mashkon and return it to her and take it each night and go back. You're going to be in and out of her house. You're going to be in and out of her house. Of a widow, it's not going to look good. It's going to give her a bad name or bad reputation. So that's why you can't take a mashkon. So mashkon or the restriction against taking a mashkon from a widow is limited to a widow who you're going to have to continuously go in and out of her house, and that's a poor widow. So if you see from here that Rabbi Shimon is Doresh time of the Kra, Shimon says, what's the reason behind lo tochbo beged almana? And based on that reason, he tells you it's limited to aniyah, not, it does not apply to ashira. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, the pasuk says, lo tochbo beged almana. We don't look at what the reason is. The Torah says, don't take a mashkon from a widow. That's it. No matter what widow it is. So now, Alma, Rabbi Yehuda, lo darish time of the Kra, Rabbi Shimon darish time of the Kra, and that's just the opposite of what we have in our mission over here. So Rabbi says, no problem, but Alma, Rabbi Yehuda, lo darish time of the Kra. Generally, Rabbi Yehuda is not darish time of the Kra. Ashani ocha, demefarish time of the Kra. Right, that's when you're trying to impose the time of the Kra into the Pasuk. You're trying to read the reason into the Pasuk. On the other hand, here, by the king, it's explicit. It gives you the explicit reason why he cannot marry too many wives. Matam lo yirbe lo nashim, mishum to lo yasur levavo. Right? Why can't he marry too many wives? The pasuk is explicit about why. Shalo yasur levavo. So therefore, if he marries more wives, then he can marry more wives if he wants, as long as they're not, right? They do not take him off the path, that the lo yasur levavo. In general, we impose or we look for the reason behind a mitzvah. Therefore, in our pasuk over here, all it has to do is say nothing. I mean, they could just say, do not marry too many wives. Why can't he marry so many wives? So they won't take him off the Derech Hashem. So lo yasur lamali, then why did the Torah go out of its way to add that additional reason if we were learned it on our own? Why does the Torah have to write it now? So that's comes to teach us the chiddush. Afilu achat, the mesir libar, is it lo yisena? Even if it's one, and she takes him off the path, lo yisena, he cannot marry her. So the, elamani mekim, lo yirbe, afilu kavigal. So what does that mean? that I can't take more, even like Avigal, I can't take more. So the nafkamin, or the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, will be that Rabbi Shimon believes that you cannot have more than 18 wives, no matter what. That's a maximum without any exceptions to the rule. Of course, if they're less than 18 and they're problematic women, or they take them off the path, then so they're also restricted. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes, like Rabbi Shimon, I'm sure he would agree, that if it was one wife that took him off the Derech Hashem, then he would agree that he can't marry her. But what Rabbi Yehuda does say is that the maximum of 18 is limited only by the fact that they shouldn't take him off the Derech Hashem. If they don't take him off the Derech Hashem, he can have more than 18 wives. And that'll be the difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Haini Shmonasra Minolan. Where does the Mishnah get this 18? Where do you get this 18 woman cap on wives? So dichtiv, because it says by David HaMelech, this is when the Navi, Natan HaNavi, comes to David HaMelech and basically gives him the mashal of the poor person and the rich person, where the rich person steals from the poor person in order to feed his guests. And David says, Motu Mat. And Natan says to him, Ata Hu Haish. It's you. This is what you just did with Bathsheba. That's he's describing to David the sin with Bathsheba and what he did that was wrong. And then he says to David, he says, listen, by David, we're going to see in a second that if you had, you had sufficient wives. If you wanted more, you could add more and more wives. But how many wives did David have? So that's what we're about to read. In the Pasuk, Dichtiv, says in the beginning of Shmuel Bet, Vayivaldu David Banim Bechevron. This is when David, in the beginning of his rule, when he's only ruling over Yehuda, first 7.5 years of his reign in Hebron, Vayi Bechoro Amnon Lachinoam HaYisraelit. Right, so that's his first one child to the wife Israelite. Umishnehu, the second one is Chilav LaAbigayo Eshet Navala Karmeli. This is Abigail who he marries right, in Shmuel Aleph after Navala Karmeli is disposed of. Vashlishi, the third child is Avshalom Ben Ma'acha. Right, that's the daughter of Tamai. So the pasuk actually they leave out that part of the pasuk and they skip to Varevi Adoniah Ben Chagit. Right, and the next one is Adoniah, the fourth child, Vachamishi, Shvatia ben Avital, Vashishi, Itra'am, Le'egla, Ishid David. Ele, Yuldu, David, Bechevron. These were born to David in Hebron. So here you have six children born to six wives. So in David, Melech has six wives. And then when the Navi comes to him, in the case of Bathsheba, the Kamar Le Navi, the Navi says to him, Im'at, if you didn't have enough, Vosif Alecha, Kahena, Vichaina. That if you had, if it wasn't enough, the six that you had already, I would have let you take kahena, like these, right? Vichaina, and like these again. So if I take, what does that mean? Kahena sheet, vichaina sheet. Each kahena means an additional six. Tahabalu, tamnesari, that'll be 18. So you had six wives already, and if it wasn't enough, you could have taken another two sets of six wives, and now we've got your 18 wives. That's where they get the number 18 from. Matgivla Ravino, Ema kahena tartesari. If you want to do it that way, let's look at it as somewhat multiplicative here. You have six wives, and if you want to take kahena, like those for six wives, you have an additional six wives, that'll be a total of 12. And then if you take kahena again, right, that'll be like the first 12 is 24. You'll get a total of 24 wives. Tanya Nami Och, we have a brisa that actually supports that reading of the pasuk. Lo yiberlo nashim yoter miyasrim bi'arba. Right, so that you can have up to 24. Ulaman do dorishvav. One is dorishvav over here. Arba'im mushmona. You could have up to 48 wives. Havu. Why? Because you'll have kahena teaches you. Right, six. That's an additional six. He has six already. Kahena means six, gets you a total of 12. Then you have kahena again. Is 12 again, so that'll be 24. The kahena, the vav over there is like saying another kahena, so that'll be 24 again of wives, be 24 plus 24 is 48 wives. And Tanya Nami Ochi, that supports that interpretation. Lo yiber lo nashim yoter marbim ushmone, can have more than 48 wives. V'tana didan. Right, our Tana, my time, hey, why does he not go in that way? We're gonna make his kahena batra, the kahena kama. He says that the kahena, the second kahena is just like the first kahena. My kahena kama sheet, just like the first kahena is worth six. Av kahena batra, sheet is worth six. So now you have, in this, you end up with 18, which is the number that our Mishnah, states. So Gemara says, ooh, are you so sure that David only had six wives? Avi Michal. What about Michal Bachul? This is what we discussed 2 days ago. Michal bat Shaul, who David marries, and then Shaul gives her to Palti ben Laish. But now in Hebron, she's brought back to David. That's one of the things that he insists that Abner helps him with, that he bring back Michal bat Shaul as his wife. And she's not mentioned in the list of six. That means he has 7 wives. Where's Michal Batshul? Tamrav, Egla, Zu Michal. The last wife that was mentioned, Egla, is Michal. V'lamani krashma Egla, shechaviv alav ke Egla. Was beloved to him like a young calf. V'cheinu Omer. So this is a pasuk from Shimshon. It says, Lulei charashtem Eglati. Had you not plowed with my calf, which is referring to his wife, he gave a chidah, he gave a riddle to the plishtim to solve over the week of Sheva Brachot, and they were unable to get it. His wife begs him to tell her what the answer to the riddle is, and then they threaten her with her life to get the riddle or the answer to the riddle from her. And he says in the end, he knows that when they come and answer the riddle, it says, Lulei charashtem Eglati. Had you not plowed with my calf, had you not forced it out of my wife, you would never have had, or you misused my wife, you would never have had the answer to the riddle. So you see here that he calls his wife Eglati. Umi havo l'michal bani. Did Michal really have children? And now if you assume that Michal is Egla, right, has a child. And the problem is, Itra'am le'Egla, does Michal really have children? Doesn't the pasuk say? V'aktiv. Michal Batshul lo yala vlad ad yom mota. That Michal Batshul had no children until the day of her death. So if she didn't have children the day of her death, then how could she be enumerated at the beginning of Shmuel? This is much later in Shmuel Bet, right? That this pasuk is mentioned, and here we're talking about the beginning of Shmuel Bet, where it says that there's Egla who has a child, Yitra'am. So how could you say that she didn't have a child? So Amar Rav Chista, Rav Chista tries to solve the problem. Ad yamunta lo ayala. That's true. Until the day of her death, she did not have a child. On the day of her death, she did have a child. And she died in childbirth, basically. The child that she had, she died having that child. The Midrash Shmuel brings down that there were 3 women that had children in childbirth and died in childbirth having those babies. One of them, of course, you know, is from the Chumash, is Rachel Imenu, who has Binyamin, right? As the birth of Binyamin is in, dies in the childbirth of Binyamin. Next one is the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, is in the death of Eli and his 2 children. Pinchas's wife, the daughter-in-law of Eli, has a child and dies having that child, and his name is Ikavod, right? That's the day the Mishkan is destroyed. And the last one would be Michal Bat Shaul, would be the 3 women that have it, and there are parallels. If you go and look, now you can see there are nice parallels between the 3 cases and these 3 women. Just pointing out for you for further review, and if you want to take a look into it. All right now, the Gemara says, oh, is that really true? Mechtei, banim hechel kachashiv. Rav Chista, that's a really nice answer that she had on the day of her death, but when were the children of David enumerated? Right? The kachashiv lehu bechevron. That this case, when they're talking about David's children, he has 6 wives, 6 children, that's back in Hebron, the first 7.5 years of his rule. V'ilu ma'aseh de Michal b'Yerushalayim habu. The case by Michal, when it says that she's not going to have children to the day of her death, when was that pasuk written? That's written in Yerushalayim, when they're mala the Aron into Yerushalayim. That's the punishment, we'll see in a second, that she gets for speaking out against David HaMelech. So that's much later on. So now you're saying that she had on the day of death, she's still alive when David's ruling in Yerushalayim, and you're talking about her having a child in Hebron. Right, she looks out the window. Right, she sees the king basically dancing like crazy, going wild before Hashem. And she was, she thought that that was beneath the dignity of the king. And obviously David takes her to task on this and says, that's why I'm the king and not your father. That this is, I'm allowed to be myself, lifnei Aron Hashem. And it's not a question that what I'm doing is correct. And on that, that's where the pasuk says that Michal Bashul, ayala vlad ad yomuta, that she didn't have a child until the day of her death. Why? Because Am Yehuda, Avitem Rav Yosef, shekalta Michal, limit arpisa. She took her, what was coming to her. I mean that she got what she deserved. But from the criticism of David, the pasuk writes what her punishment was, that she didn't have a child on the day of her death because she was misguided in criticizing David in this instant. So, Ella Ema, ad otomase hayala. So what you have to suggest is, until that moment, she did have a child. Mikan ve'elech lo hayala. From there onward, she did not have a child. I mean that, from that point forward, it says the pasuk that she had no children until the day of her death. But that doesn't mean that she didn't have children prior to that time. V'aktiv. Alright, so that's the answer to the Gemara. You could read it that the Gemara is amending Rav Chisda's statement to say, what does it mean, Yom Mota, that she had a child on Yom Mota. That's the second stage of her life, that she had earlier in her life, she did have it, but now we're only counting on this incident forward. The more likely way to read the Gemara is that the Gemara is rejecting Rav Chisda and saying Rav Chisda is wrong. It wasn't that she had a child on the day of her death, but rather from this day forward she had no children. But that doesn't mean that she did not have children before this point in time. The obvious stira to this is the puzzle that we saw 2 days ago, which says that Ulmichal Bachobo Khameshit Banim. The five children of Michal Bachul, right, are mentioned in the Pasuk when David hands over children, Shaul's children, to the Givonim. There are mentioned the five children of Michal Bachul that were born to Adriel. And that's what the Gemara deals with. Wait a minute. Michal's not married to Adriel. Who was married to Adriel? It was Merav. Right, so Merav being born to that Merav had the children. So why is Michal? They're called by Michal's name because she brought them up. But that's not the pasuk. Pshat is that she did have children. Right? I mean, the children. So you have to reconcile again. The Gemara here doesn't deal with that pasuk. The Gemara already dealt with it 2 days ago. But that's another issue for the Gemara over here. All right, now Ba'ativ. Wait a minute. Right, David. Vayikach David od pilagshim v'nashim b'Yerushalayim. Right, so we know that David had later on has more wives and more pilagshim in Yerushalayim. So how could you say that kahina, all these, you know, meaning what is the limit? Is 18 if David has many more wives? But it says no, the Muya Ishmanasa, he got up to 18. He didn't go beyond 18. He was only 6 when he started. So now when he added more, he only got up to 18. My nashim umayim pilagshim. What's the difference between a wife and what's the difference between a pilagish? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, nashim biktuba ubikidushin. Wives have a ktubah and have kiddushim. Pilagshim, on the other hand, below ktubah, ubelok kiddushim. They have neither. Right, their wives have only, say, wives, a proper wife has kiddushim, has ktubah. A pilagesh has neither of those. They're not entitled to need nor a ktubah, nor do they have kiddushim with the individual. So that's actually subject to a machlokas. Machlokas really revolves around the girsa in our Gemara. Girsa in our Gemara is not so clear. We have a girsa here, which many of the Rishonim had, but it seems that there was an alternative girsa, which was picked up possibly by Rashi and by the Raivud, that have an alternative girsa over here in the Gemara. It's not mentioned here over the daf, but the famous, it's a Rashi that's found by Avram Avinu, by Keturah. It says, by Avram Avinu, Luvnei ha-pilagshim shel Avram, natan Avram matanot, v'yishalchem yal Yitzchak b'no, b'denu chai ked mal eretz kedem. That Avram has children through pilagshim. Over there, Rashi claims, what is that? What does it mean that Avram had pilagshim? So listen to Rashi. Rashi says, nashim biktuba, pilagshim below ktuba. Kidamrin and b'sanhedrin. He quotes our Gemara right here, in Kafala Famadal, b'nashim u'pilagshim to David. So what is Rashi only has one difference between an isha and a pilagish. What is his? Nashim biktuba, pilagshim below ktuba. Based on that, what would you say from Rashi? That a pilagish and an isha both require kiddushin. Right, so that doesn't fit with our Gemara over here. So the Ramban, right on the spot, the Ramban ala Torah there takes Rashi to test. Says Rashi Ktav, says Vena Davar Kain, Kilo Chikra Pilaglish, El Gashi below Kiddushin. The Ramban says, I have the Gemara here, it says that you don't have to be called a Pilaglish, you can't have Kiddushin. Ki Aktuva Midivrei Sofrim. Aktuva is only the Rabbonon. So how could a Rabbonon be the difference between a Pilaglish and an Isha? It has to be there's something Midoraisa that differentiates them. Girsa b'Sanhedrin. What's the girsa in the Gemara in Sanhedrin? Pilagish below ktuba v'kiddushin. But it's clear that he believed that Rashi must have had an alternative girsa. Where do you see that? You see that in the Rambam. The Rambam Hilchot Ishut, right? Brings down what a pilagish is. He brings the story. It's a Rambam Hilchot Ishut Perkaf Alochad Dalit. He says, Kodem Matan Torah Yadam Pugei Isha B'Shul Kimratzahu V'hi Noten Laschara U'Belotah. You can pay, this is explaining the Yehuda and Tamar story, before Matan Torah, man meets a woman, and he can pay for her services, and that's it. He creates Kadesha. That was called a Kadesha. Mishnitna Torah Nesra HaKadesha. The time the Torah was given, a Kadesha is impermissible, Shinemar, Lo Tie Kadesha Bibnot Yisrael. Cannot have a Kadesha Bibnot Yisrael. Lafichach, this is the conclusion of the Rambam, which is very controversial. That's it. The Rambam believes that a person who has bia with a woman l'shem znut, that is a without kiddushin, that you loke minatorah. You get malchus minatorah for having relations with a woman, even a pnuya. It sounds like from the Rambam that this is the Rambam Shita, which many disagree with, that a single woman who one has relations with will then require you to be, you're over a lav and you'll get malchus for that. So the Raivad on the spot disagrees. He says, "Ein kdeisha ela mezumenet ubi mufkeret l'chol adam." Kdeisha, when you want to talk about a kdeisha, kdeisha is someone who is just is willing to have relations with anybody. She has no, she's not discerning in any way, and she's not particular, right? She's hefker l'chol adam. She says, then he quotes the Gemara here from our Gemara in Sanhedrin. He says, "V'yesh sfarim shekatuv lahem pilatshim kiddushim below ktuba." Said, there's girsas in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, our girsa, that has a girsa of kiddushin below ktubah. That a pilagish is someone who has kiddushin without ktubah. So what? That, who's that? That's the girsa that Rashi must have had. Rashi, when he quotes it, Perashat Torah, he says exactly that. That what's a pilagish? Someone has kiddushin without a ktubah. So based on that, right, he says, the Raivad wants to reject that and say no. Based on the Rambam, it would say that the only way not to have an Isur Lav is to have Kiddushin with a woman, which would support that position of Rashi and that Girsa in the Gemara. The Raivad says he doesn't think that's the case. But even if you have that Girsa in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he says, nevertheless, there's still three stages. There's a Kiddushin, there is a Hefkeret Lakol, and there's somebody in between that. Someone who is Miyuchad for a specific person. They live together. When they live together, there's no Isur of Kdesha when a man and a woman live together. It's not a Pilegish, but it's also not a Kdesha. So Ravid has that in-between stage, which the Rambam doesn't seem to have. But again, he quotes the same Girsa that we have in our, that Rashi seems to have in our Gemara over here. The Hasukot Ramban on the Sefer Mitzvot, Church Hey, discusses, over here, I'll read it to you, Aval Bnei HaKdushin Panuy Aval Pnuya Im Ladat Pilegshut. A single man, single woman get together and have relations. If they're doing with the intention to become pilagshim, right? Zeh mutarhu. They can become a pilagish. You can have a pilagish. If you come together to be a pilagish, that's fine. So you're clear from the Ramban, you do not require kiddushin to make a pilagish. Aval im bala derech mikre, kinyan azonim, zeinu bichlal al techalel lebitchal aznota, velo bichlal lab kdesha, ledivei rabbi lazer vein alacha kumoto. So he has the same thing that the Ravid suggests, that even though, so if he has intention to make her into a pilegish, he can do that if he has relations with her. But if he has relations with her, derech mikre, right, just by happenstance, that's not quite a zonah. That's not a restriction of the lab of lo tiek kdesha against the Rambam, because it's only someone, like he's saying, that's hefker lakol, or that's called a zonah. But not someone who is just sleeps or has relations with an individual. That's not a code of Kadesha, and he argues on the Rambam on this point. I'll point out to the Rambam also in other places. It's clear that the Rambam had other views on this, because in Hilchot Melachim, as it is, the Rambam writes in Hilchot Melachim, Per Gimel Alachabet, Lo Yerbelo Nashim, a king may not have multiple wives. You can only have 18 wives, but 18 wives means wives and pilagshim, both of them together. Together they can't equal up to 18, which is what it sounds like from our Gemara that we just read over here. Then it says, David hosif, right, that he had nashim upilagshim, and then the Gemara says up to 18. So it sounds like that pilagshim and nashim count towards 18. The Raivad on the spot disagrees and says no. When the Gemara we just learned beforehand said, that was talking about his six wives, real wives, and six plus six, that'd be 18. That's 18 wives. That's excluding Pilakshim, and the Ravid disagrees. It says 18 is a limit on real wives. Pilakshim, there is no cap on Pilakshim. That's what the Ravid says. And the Rambam in Halacha Dalet says, Upilakshim below Ktuba, ubelow Kiddushin. So what the Raivad was implying back in Hilchot Ishut, that the Rambam thinks that a Pilegish has Kiddushin. The Rambam is clear over here that it's below Ktubah or below Kiddushim. Ela biyichud bilvad. How do you make a Pilegish? You designate her as a Pilegish. Because we give why is that? Ota muteret umaterlo avahel diot asur bi Pilegish. Ela ba'am riviyah bilvad ha'echar yud. So, but a normal person is asur in a Pilegish. So the isur of the right to have a pilegesh is only open to a king, according to the Rambam. That's unique to a king, and otherwise there's an isur on a person to have a pilegesh. But it's only unique to a king. The Ramban that we read before disagrees and says a pilegesh is open to anybody. Anybody can have a pilegesh. Up into modern times, one can have a pilegesh. That's still around. the Ramban, but others write, the Radvaz and others write already that we prefer not to, even according to the Ramban, that allows it. In these instances, in modern day, we see already that there's problems. People are not so careful about what they do and these serum that they're over, and let's just not allow this to happen, because here the Radvaz is right now, just right to be Ilubi Kedushan Kulama Surim Chutz Me Arashva Da Fila Raiva Tzal Modeh Hu Da Ife Yisura Koshkei Medor HaRah Hazeh Shkol HaOlam Parutz B'Viyat Shfachot Morim Heter Latzmam Barmin Kesef Asher Kana Utobahem Hem Kesef Kedushav Zeh Ta'ut Mufursam Ken Kedushim Tofsim B'Shivcha. Anyway, he says that how we're going to be matter Pilegesh when we're already having problems with all these other things. He says no way we can be matter Pilegesh in our time. It's interesting here that the Rosh, and I just point this out, the Rosh in Masechet Ketubot on the bracha of Kiddushin, right, the bracha that we make before we have Kiddushin, Shas lanu et arusot, v'yit lanu et nusuot. So he says, listen, this. Happens to be a major machloket arishonim, whether the mitzvah, there is such a thing as a mitzvah of Kiddushin. The Rosh, Lashitoto, says that there is no such mitzvah as Kiddushin. So then this bracha that we're making, how could it be that it's a bracha, it's a berkat mitzvah, there is no mitzvah? Because he says, ki piriya urviya hainu kiyama mitzvah. The way you're making the mitzvah is through piriya urviya, kiddushin's not. V'im lakach pilegesh, v'kiyam piriya urviya, enu mechuyav l'kadei shisha. There's a way to do this mitzvah without ever having kiddushin. The only way to have children is not to have kiddushin. There's an alternative. What's the alternative? Have a pilegesh. Take a pilegesh, and then you can have children. Right, the ein chiyuv b'mitzvah zu, she'ein ba kiyum mitzvah periyavia, hilkach lo nitkana bracha b'mitzvah zu. There is no bracha for this mitzvah. So then why do we make the bracha? So what does the Rosh say? The Rosh has to say, that is a birkat zu nitkana detain shevach l'kodesh baruch hu. That's a birkat shevach. So you see two things from the Rosh. Number one is that there's no mitzvah by kiddushin. Number two you see from the Rosh is that he believes that pilegesh does not require a kiddushin. Because he says you can be mekayin the mitzvah piri rivya through a pilegesh. So number one, it's mutter lehejot. Number two is that it's what?
Without kiddushin.
Right, without kiddushin. And he says no problem. It's all in birkat shevach. Based on this, the Shul Har Tzvi in Eben Ezer connects the two machlokot, whether kiddushin is d'oraisa or not, to this issue of pilegesh. He says, "Inei shurish devar zed tayu plukta rishonim depligei b'yaseret ha-gemara b'sanhedrin." The parech, "My nashim u my pilegshim." Amar Yehuda marab nashim b'ktuba b'kiddushim. Pilegshim b'lo ktuba b'lo kiddushim. D'rashi b'perish ha-chumish goris. Pilegshim b'li ktuba. So that gives you mashma b'kiddushim yesh lehem. D'bli kiddushim asurot. Of a Ramban, Sham, which we read, choleg v'amer kiddusha b'gemara pilegshim b'li kiddushim. Based on that, he wants to suggest that the machlokas over here about Birkat Erusin has to do exactly with this machlokas. So you'll see, he says over here, the Fizeh Amarti, the Had, the Pligi Rambam, Rival Birkat Erusin, Indina Levarechota, Overle Asiataulo, the mitzvah to say Birkat Erusin, do you have to say it before the Erusin? Or you can even say it afterwards. The Shitai Tayuazel, they're going to one of your pins. The Rambam severely the etzim kiddushin mitzvah. The Rambam believes doing kiddushin is a mitzvah. Chayin severely the birkatan he birkata mitzvah. Mekevin shi birkata mitzvah beachrech levechuta kodam a kiddushin. And he too will hold that what? The demand on you when you have a pilegesh is to have kiddushin. The only way to get married, it's a mitzvah to do kiddushin. Therefore you must make the bracha overly asiyatan, you have to do it before the mitzvah of kiddushin. And you will require kiddushin, right, in order not to be violate the isur, even for a pilegesh. About arrivat svilei kar rosh, dein bi kiddushin mitzvah. Shrei svilei pilegesh hi below kiddushin. You see that, you can have pilegesh without kiddushin. Therefore, it's not a birka mitzvah, but rather birka shevach. And then the rabbi will agree that you can do the birka even after the kiddushin. Even after you've done the kiddushin, you can make the birka kiddushin because it's a birka shevach. So the Har Tzvi connects all of these together and makes them into one large machloket that there is whether you need kiddushin by pilegesh, the Girsan Ar Gemara, whether kiddushin is a mitzvah, and where the birkat kiddushin is a mitzvah, or whether it's for a birkat mitzvah or a birkat shevach, connects all three of those machlokot together. There's other, if you look there, the Kes Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah, the Radvaz all deal with the Shitas Rambam, and they disagree with the Raiva, they think he misread the Rambam, and how to deal with the fact that it only applies to a king and not to a hedjot. Again, we have a lot more to do, and a lot more exciting stuff to do, so we'll move along here. All right. Alright, the Gemara continues over here. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Abba Meyot Yiladim Ayulo L'David, Bukulayim B'nei Yifat Toar Hu Ayu. That he had 400 children, and they all were children of Yifei Toar. Megadlei Bloriot, they grew out their hair, they had ponytails and all. Ayu V'chulan, Yoshivim B'kronot Shel Zahav, they all traveled down in golden wagons or chariots. Malchim Roshei Gaisot, they were leaders of his armies, they were his front lines. V'mayu Balei Agofim Shel Beit David, they were the strong men of David. Tamar bat Yifei Toar haita. Tamar was the daughter of a Yifat Toar. Shenemar, v'ata tedaber na el haMelech ki lo yimani mimcha. That the Tamar, when Amnon wants to marry Tamar, well, doesn't really want to marry her. He's trying to force her. He's trying to rape her. So Tamar says, "Don't do this. Let's go speak to the king, and we can get married." Wait a minute. What do you mean? Go speak to the king, and we can get married? Amnon is a son of David, and Tamar is a daughter of David. They are brother and sister through their father. If they are brother and sister through the father, how could they ever get married? If it then makes him his sister, how could they be mutar to each other? That she must have been a bat yifat toar. Why? Because who is she? Her brother is Avshalom. And we said before that Avshalom was born to Ma'acha, who was bat Talmai, right? The daughter of Talmai. And so Rashi explains over here that Achot Avshalom, and she was a bat yifat toar. Why? Kodim shenit gaira b'leiv shalem. Before she converted fully, Machal Imo Yodal Lo Le David et Tamar. That David had Tamar from her as a Yifat Toar. Vaitai Tzlo B'Torat Yifat Toar. So that she was born out of Yifat Toar. Later on, she converts, and then she becomes a full wife of his, and that's Avshalom. Sounds like Avshalom's born in that manner as a full wife. But because of that, she is born to a non-Jewish mother. And we know when you have a non-Jewish mother, or a shivcha, that the vlad is miyuchas, not achar ha'av, but achar ha'im. Over there, and therefore, Tamar was miyuchas to her mother and not to David. If that's the case, then Tamar and Amnon were not brother and sister based on that halacha, or that halachic, that halachic ramification, where they were not married. Now, just the term Yifat Toar, it's interesting that the Gemara uses here, is trying to figure out a way where it says Yifat Toar. The term Yifat Toar is used as a broader description of a woman who's taken for her beauty rather than her ruchaniyut and for her character traits and all the good things about her, but sometimes focused on the external and the Yifat Toar. The term is used by, for instance, Rachel Imenu. It's used over there that she's a Yifat Toar, right? It's used by Yosef. It's used by Abigail, Esther. The term is used very infrequently in the Parot of Paro. It's used Yifat Toar. It's used to describe some sort of external beauty. And it doesn't preclude that there's an internal beauty, but it's clear that that's the focus of whatever's taking place. There's on the external beauty. So the same thing over here. We have to say, take Yifat Toar. You have to take it literally. I don't know. But here the Gemara is trying to take it literally. But when you say Yifat Toar, it means that women, they were married for their beauty. And that could be what it meant by the 400 children before as well. So the Gemara says, "V'amnon Reya Ushmo Yonadav Ben Shem Achei David." So the Amnon had a good friend named Yonadav Ben Shem Achei David, and that he was Yonadav Ish Chacham. He was a wise man. So Amar Yehuda Amar Rav Ish Chacham L'Risha. He was very wise, but it was not in a positive manner. He was a less than stellar character, this individual. He gave advice, but evil advice, not good advice. Yomar Maduata Kachadal Ben HaMelech comes to his good friend Amnon and says, "Why are you looking so despondent today?" By Yomer, though Yehonadav, our Gerson, in our Navi is not Yonadav, but Yehonadav. Shchav al Mishkavcha Vitchal. Let me tell you what to do. Pretend you're sick, right? Lay on your bed and pretend that you're sick. Ad Vasta Leinai Etabirya. And then that he gives him all the advice until that point that she should make before him in front of his eyes. David comes and asks what's going on with Amnon. Amnon says, "Listen, can you get my sister Tamar to come in here and take care of me, and she'll make me some nice pancakes or fried dishes in front of me, and that'll be good." Vatikach hamasreit. She takes the pan, vatitzok lefanav, and she pours it in front of him. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav shastolo mini tegun. She made him some fried stuff, meaning some pancakes, something, whatever she makes for him. French toast. Amnon, she hated him a great hatred. my time, Rav Yitzchak, Neimag Nikshara Lo, Vasto Krut Shivcha, that a hair got caught around his member, and it caused him to be a Krut Shivcha. Why is he hating her? Did she do it on purpose? My Abda, what did she do wrong? It was something that happened by accident. She did it intentionally. She tied a hair around his member and caused him to be a Krut Shivcha, right, to therefore somehow sever or deem impotent his member, and therefore he was upset about it. Ini. Right, that it will go out in the nations that the Jewish girls are the most beautiful girls. That the Jewish girls don't have hair under their arms and do not have pubic hair. So if that is what makes them beautiful, and Tamar was beautiful, one of the most beautiful women, so then how could she have hair that would cause this problem or that she intentionally caused the problem? So Shani Tamar, the Bat Fator have I. Oh, Tamar is not really a Jewish girl. She was born out of a Fator. She's bought from Achra before she converted. So that's why she had it. She had those hairs, but no, the other Jewish girls did not. Later on, the Gemara in other places talks about that the one of the things of the Churban, the Chataim of the Churban, caused the Jewish women also to have the hair just like all the other women, and they lost this unique beauty that they had because of the Churban. Alright. Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosha. She puts ashes on her head and she rips her ktonet tapasim that she had. She walks in, she's crying in front of the Beit HaMelech. Obviously, Avshalom, her brother, comes and takes care of her and later takes revenge on Amnon for what took place. Tana Mishmeid Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Geder Gadol Gidra Tamar Botasha. That moment, Tamar did something unbelievable. Amru Livnot Melachim Kach. This can happen to a princess. Livnot Ejot Alchad Kama Kama. Certainly can happen to any layperson. Imlet Tznuot Kach, a woman who conducted herself in a manner of Tznuot, happened like this, the Putzot Achad Kama Kama. And therefore, we're going to see what was the Gzeira, Amri Vidom Rabo Tasha'a Gazru. That time they were Gozer Al Yichud Val Apnuya, Yichud, right? That they, I'm sorry, Al Yichud Val Apnuya. That time they were Gozer, that a single woman on Yichud, that there's an Isra Yichud, plus there's an Isra Yichud on single women. It says, Yichud Doraito! Yichud is a din d'oraisa that supports the positions of machlokes arishonim, whether Yichud is d'oraisa or not. In this Gemara, it sounds like Yichud is d'oraisa. Tam Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shem, Menil Tzedak, Remz Yichud min HaTorah, Minayin. How do we know from the Torah that there is an Isra Yichud? Shenemar, ki yisitcha achicha ben imecha. So it says that if your brother, ben imecha, the son of your mother, chi ben ein mesit, ben av einu mesit, but it's only a son of a mother that is mesit, that takes people off the track, not ben av. A child is allowed to be yichud in his mother. No other right shibatorah allowed to be in yichud. Ella, ema gazru al yichud de pnuya. And then the answer is that it's a yichud of pnuya. Yichud of pnuya was what they were gozer on. That's what the rabbanan were gozer. Yichud in general was asur midoraisa. But a pnuya was only introduced by David or the zman of David HaMelech. Anyway, here's the remez yichud min haTorah that's deoraisa. So over here, the Rashi over here in Ketubot mentions about when we talk about the Birkat Arusin. Birkat Arusin says, what is it? Shekitzanu mitzvanu al arayot v'asar lanu et arusot. On that, asar lanu et arusot. Rashi writes, midrabanan shigazru al yichud sheo pnuya. What is asar lanu et arusot? Since when is an arusa asur? An arusa is asur to others, but why is the arusa asur to the arus himself? Where does that come from? Rashi claims that comes from the Isur Yichud Eme Pnuya. Comes from here, right here in our Gemara. And that's why we say, Sha'asar Lanu Eta Arusot, that a husband is not allowed to be with his Arusa because of this. Shigazu Ala Yichud Shal Pnuya Vavrusa Lo Itira Shikanes L'Chupa. Tell your Rishu Chupa, there's an Isur Yichud on the Arusa, she's a Pnuya. That comes from our Gemara over here. So now, in this way, and this is important, this Gizera of Yichud Al Pnuya, is, might have to do with whether the woman is a nida or not a nida. Because if the pnuya, if the single woman is a nida, then she's what? She's an erva. If she's an erva, there's an isur yichud mina Torah. So it might be that the isur yichud that was nigzar over your pnuya is only when she wasn't a nida. She's not a nida, she's not an erva. If she's not an erva, that's when they're gzera yichud, right, gzera yichud al from midrabanan or mid beit David. Is there any nafkamina? What does it matter if Yichud is midrabbanon or if Yichud is midoraisa? So here there are some, there are a couple of shutin that actually have nafkamina, the three here that could bring just quickly. One is a tzitz Eliezer. Right, tzitz Eliezer has to do with a woman, a midwife, who has to go on Shabbos to deliver a baby. So she's mechala, how she's mechala Shabbos, she gets in the cab with a man. So now she's biyuchud with the man and going to the hospital on Shabbos to go deliver the baby. She's allowed to be mechala Shabbos, she's allowed to go to deliver the baby. But now she has an isur yichud. And isur yichud is not nidcha mipnei pikuach nefesh, it's a bizirayu darayu, it's not nidcha. So the question here, should they send someone else in the car? Right, yeah, the cab, he's driving, but it's a Jewish driver, especially if it's a Jewish driver, not a Jewish driver, but there's a driver. Right? Right, but there, she's mechal, it's better if she can't, either she doesn't drive by herself, or she's, it's better that she doesn't, right, it's a non-Jewish driver, it's better if she doesn't. Alright, so the question was, should they send someone else in the cab with her? Should they send a katan in the car, or should they send a gadol, even if there's no katan, should they send a gadol along with her? So there won't be a problem of yichud. Should we prevent yichud and be mechal Shabbos? And there's a heter for Chilul Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, no heter for Yichud. So here, the discussion of the Tzitz Eliezer is about this. So in the end, he says it's best to send, if you can, to send a katan. But he said, it depends what the midwife status. The midwife is an Eish Edish, then the Isra Yichud is a Yichud mi Deoraisa. If she's a Pnuya, if she's a single woman, it's only Isra Yichud mi Derabanan. So Yisra Yichud mi Derabanan, the consideration might be different. And over there, if we can send a katan, where it's both dinei derabanan, maybe we should do it. But if it's a gadol, maybe over there we would not say be over a din doraisa, right, for a pnuya, where the Yisra Yichud is only a din derabanan. So that's one nafkamina. What? Right, what is he doing against the hospital? That they don't address in the, they don't address that in the shoot. Right, the next one is Igris Moshe, and Igris Moshe is talking about a man, very old man, who no longer has tambia. He doesn't have any desire for women, but he has a misharit, he has a nurse that takes care of him. Problem is that there's a Yisra Yichud with the nurse and this individual. So is there a Yisra Yichud or not? So he quotes David HaMelech, that they brought the Vishag Ashunamit later on in life to him. So that, again, the Igris Moshe says that there you're depending on David HaMelech to withhold himself, who is Malat HaTzadikim. But nevertheless, he wants to suggest over here that if the woman is a Pnuya, where there's only an Isur Derabonon, then when you have a Isur Derabonon, and you're dealing with a person who has no Tambiya, there he's willing to be Matir. That a nurse who's a Pnuya, where there's only Isur Yichud Derabonon, he's willing to be Matir, where the person has no Tambiya. Whereas if it's Isur Yichud Doraisa, if she's an Isur Ish, there you wouldn't permit it, because then you're dealing on the level of Doraisa. So again, there's an afkamina between it being an Isur Yichud Derabonon or Isur Yichud Doraisa. Right, he also mentions over here about younger girls. That today we know that people don't have any desire, or, you know, even when girls are 7 and 8 years old, there's no tambiya. He says in our day it's clear. He says so there shouldn't be an Isur Yichud in those instances, because Yichud bin Apunya is only midrabanan, and therefore you could be Maktir. He says he's not willing to be Maktir. He says if she's a Suffolk Bat Shalosh, she's willing to be Maktir, because then you have a Suffolk in Derabanan. He says, but the girls are a little older than 3, but don't really, there's no desire for them, they're still young. He says there he's not willing to Maktir, but he says that he's not, those that are Makil, he says are fine because of this Yisur Yichud is only midrabanan. Therefore we see it's clear that there's no Tambiya, that it's fine to be Maktir. He doesn't want to do himself, but he says others who do, he won't stop them. The last Nafkamino is also, brought down in the Mishnah Halachot, who's a modern day posek, talks about the issues in cars, about going out on dates, and that people should be careful that there is an Isur Yichud with a Pnuya, and therefore, especially if she's a Nida, there's an Isur Yichud Deoraisa. A woman's a Nida, when she's a Pnuya, there's an Isur Yichud Deoraisa, and they should be careful when they're driving out on dates that they want to go to private places, they should make sure that's not so private, because then you end up with an Isur Yichud Deoraisa with a Pnuya. Based on that, he wants to say, you know, make sure you park in a place. He said maybe the times have changed and that there are people on the road, if not, but don't go to secluded places, because that would be an Isur Yichud Deoraisa. All right. So Adoniah, the son of David HaMelech, in the beginning, Malachim Aleph, says that he was running around saying that I'm going to rule. Right? So Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Malamed, Shebikesh, Lohomo. Right? Ve Lohomoto. That he wanted to put on the crown, but the crown did not fit him. So what does that mean? So Rashi claims that here from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that old Machubei David used to have a crevice in their heads. There was a bar that went across the crown. When they put the crown on, if you had that crevice, the crown would fit you, because it would fit into that crevice or this indentation in your head. If you didn't have that, you weren't from Malchut Beit David. That's the way Rashi reads it. Rabbeinu Hananel is more neutral on what exactly it was. I would have suggested that the bar on the crown bent. Do you know, I mean, there was a bar across and only bent for those that put it on that were from Malchut Beit David. That was the nace. But if you weren't from Malchut Beit David, it didn't bend, so you couldn't fit the crown on your head. So it didn't fit onto the head of Adoniah. But Rashi clearly says that they had some sort of indentation which the bar fit into. And Adoniah did, just was missing that little crevice in his head. All right. We have 50 men running for him. My Rebuta, what's the big deal? Of course, all princes have 50 men running before them. What was special about these men? They had their spleens removed. They took some sort of medication that removed their spleens. And their feet were calloused so that they did not feel the ground, meaning that they were very fast and they were impervious to pain and to other running around. So they were these special types of runners that he had. All right, Mishnah. He's only allowed to have horses enough for his army, for his cavalry. He shouldn't have too much money, meaning too much gold and silver, in order to pay his troops. He has to write a Sefer Torah for his own name. If he goes out to war, he takes it with him. Comes back from battle, he has to write it with him. He sits in din, it's with him. He can egdo, he sits around, you know, lays down, it's with him. It's got to be with him all the time. The Sefer Torah that he takes has to be with him at all times. Right, you would have thought, and even enough for his cavalry, for his own personal use, he may not have too many horses. He's allowed to have it for his, you know, for his riding around, for his limousine service, and for his cavalry. Susim. So what does it mean? Susim abatlanim. So that means, what do I mean that he can't have too many susim? Susim means that they're ones that are not used. He can't just be bringing up horses in the stables. He can't be a horse developer, hair speculator. Even one horse too many is lo yirbe. Right? Because you won't have too many susim. Bichar, so it's written in the sus, in the singular. Bichar, dafil sus echad, behu batel kai, below your best susim, lamali. So then, why does it say it, lo your best susim, in the plural? It says one sus is enough to be violated, why is it susim in the plural? So the Gemara says, la borla, below to say, akul sus vsus, to tell you that every extra horse that you have above the needs of the king and his cavalry, you violate a lotase. Taima dichtav rachmana lo. So the point is here that had it not written lo, halav halchi avmin afil kdei rechbo for hashav nami lo. Had it not written that the lo, the diuk that we had for that, he wouldn't have to have a cavalry. He wouldn't be able to have his own limousine service. He wouldn't be able to have his own cavalry for his army. Rashi says, what do you mean? How could that be? How could you have a king without a cavalry or without chariots? That makes no sense. So he says, lo, the tzrich la fushe. But the heptah that comes out of the diuk from lo is to tell you that you can have a big cavalry. Not just a minimum cavalry, or not a minimum number of chariots. You can have an expansive army. You can have a full-fledged and expansive army. It's not limited to just the what's exactly necessary, or just a minimum army. You can have a full-fledged army, and you can have as many as you want, as long as the purpose is for the army, and not that there's stam sitting around the susim. Again, the word lo, right? Even to give to his army, that it's not for him, but he can do enough to give to his army. So only because the deal of lo, you say that he can pay his army? If he didn't say the word lo in the pasuk, you would have thought he can't pay his army? What type of king is this? How can you have a king who doesn't pay his army, doesn't have a standing army? Right? So it's, you know, to make an expansive army again that he can have, he can pay. He doesn't have to mitzamtzim exactly how many soldiers that he hires or how much he pays them. No, he can do it without any regard to the number or to have an expansive army. That's fine. But as long as it's for the army, he can't have it for his own personal use. If you say lo is the drusha, then what are you going to do with the last thing? We talked about kesef zahav, we talked about susim. What else did we just mention in the pasuk of the melech? Lo, your be, lo, nashim. So now what are you going to say? My darash, be. Right, what are you going to say? Lo, your be, lo, nashim. So the Mar says, the mute hetiotot comes to exclude hetiotot. And that that they are mutar, narbot nashim. That regular people can have as many wives as they want, and that they don't have that 18 limit that the king has, because we don't worry as much about lo yisur levavo. Even if it will be lo yisur levavo, that only affect an individual, not the whole nation who has a king that goes off the derech. Right. Rama Yehuda Ramikte Vayilu Shlomo 40,000 Urevot Susim Lemerkavto. Shlomo had 40,000 stalls of Susim, of horses, for his chariots. Uchtev Vayilu Shlomo Arbat Alafim Uriot, as the gear said, should be the Uriot Susim. That he had 4,000 stalls of Susim. How do you reconcile? How can that? Him Arbaim Elef. It's tablot. If he had 40,000 stables, you call you bo dalarafim, right, or vote. Then if he had 40,000 stables, each stable had 4,000 stalls in it. Vim da dalafim is tablot abu, or he had 4,000 stables, call you bo arbim elef or vote susim, had 40,000 stalls in it. So the 4,000 and the 40,000 reconciled by one of them referring to stables and one of them referring to stalls. Right now, Rav Yitzchak Rami Ktiv Ein Kesef Nechshav Bimei Shlomo Le'Me'umah. The time of Shlomo, money was considered like nothing. I mean, it was worthless. There was so much Kesef Zav that money was worthless. Uchtiv, but it says also Vayitein. Here it is. It's the pasuk found both in Melachim Aleph and in Divrei Yomim. Based on which one it is, you have a difference in the gear. So one is Vayitein Amelech Et Kesef Yerushalayim Kabanim. The other one is Vayitein Shlomo. So there you see that it had some value. He brought the money of the silver up to Yerushalayim, kiavanim, like precious stones. So that seems to mean that the kesef had value. Lokasha, kodem shnasa shlomo et bat paro, kan acha shnasa shlomo et bat paro. Depends. One of them is said before he married bat paro, and one of them is said after he married bat paro. You can read that either way, right? To mean that either that the marrying of bat paro was a negative, was a sin, and therefore he didn't have so much money anymore, or the other way around, when he married bat paro, he got a tremendous amount of wealth, right, through bat paro, and because of that, he, with the peace treaty with bat paro Mitzrayim, that made him so that everything was worthless in his time. Amra b'Yitzchak. When he married Baparo, which was something that he maybe shouldn't have done, but Gabriel came along and put a stake in the ocean, the Mediterranean, and all of a sudden there was a big flood, a rush, and that created what was Italy or the city of Rome. By the way, just an interesting idea that at the time that the Mikdash is built by Shlomo HaMelech, when he marries Bat Paro, already the destroyers of the Mikdash are born on that day. Something that went wrong on that day here is indicating that the seeds, right, no, not that Mikdash, the second Mikdash, but the seeds of destruction are sown on the day of the, right, on the day of the building of the Mikdash, similar to the Midrash by Tisha B'Av, that on the day of the destruction of the Mikdash, on that day was born the, right, the idea that born the Mashiach, that the salvation is born on the day, the seeds of salvation are born on the day of destruction. So here, on the day of building, the seeds of destruction are sown. Rami Yitzchak, Mimei Ma'an Olin Tgalu Tamei Torah. Why is the Tamei Torah not given out to everyone? Shari Shtei Mikraot Nitgalu. Taman Nikshav Hen Gedol Olam. Two psukim about which the reasons were given out, great people failed on them. K'tiv Lo Yerbe Lo Nashim Amar Shlomo Ani Erbev Lo Asur. Says, I'll have many wives, and I won't go off the derech. Uchtiv Vayil Eid Zignat Shlomo. And that's exactly what happens when Shlomo gets old. Right? Nashav Yitu Et Levavo. His wives took him off the derech. Uchtiv Lo Yerbe Lo Susim. It says that you're not allowed to have too many horses. Amar Shlomo Ani Erbev Lo Ashiv. I'll take many susim, and I won't go back down to Mitzrayim. Bichtiv, it says, "Vatetze merkavah Mitzrayim b'sheish meot." It says what the price is. It's really a continuation of the puzzle that's relevant over here. The prices of susim out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the source for susim. At the end of that pasuk, it says that Shlomo's men became traders, international traders in the horses from Mitzrayim. And being international traders in the horses from Mitzrayim, they were going down to Mitzrayim. It wasn't even just for what was necessary. In the end, that's what happens. They get stuck there. People are going down to Mitzrayim to source horses for other nations. Dave, Sefer Torah Lishmo, he has to write a Sefer Torah for his name. Tana, Uvach lo yina'eh b'shel avotav. He's not allowed to use the one that was given to him from his fathers. Amar Ava. Ava pi shi'nichol avotav l'adam Sefer Torah, mitzvah lechtov b'shelo. Even though a person has a Sefer Torah that he inherits from his father, there's a mitzvah, an obligation on him to write his own. Shinemar vata kitvu lechem et shira zot. Right, that's the requirement at the end of Sefer Dvarim, to write down a Sefer Torah. That's the last mitzvah in the Torah, the mitzvah of Ktivat Sefer Torah. Eitz ve'abaye v'kol tuflei Sefer Torah l'shmo. Shlo yina'e v'shel achirim. So it sounds like he has to write Kodelo Sefer Torah l'shmo. Shlo yina'e v'shel achirim. That he won't get a benefit from others, meaning from his fathers. Melechin hejo lo. It sounds from here that only the king has this requirement, but a regular person does not have a requirement. No, the Gemara says lo. Shrikha l'shtei Torot. No, what are we talking about here? When we're talking about Yifilo Tov Lo, that the king has a din of two Torot. Kedetanya, Rebbe Brisa, Bechadu, Lovin Mishneh Torah Zol, that's written in Parshat HaMelech. He has to write down the Torah. Kotev Lishmo Shtei Torot, he has to write two Sifrei Torah. Achat Shiyotza V'nichnas Imo. It's one Torah that he carries around with him all the time. V'achat Shemenech Lo V'beit Nazav. And one of them that's in his palace, in his storehouses. The one that goes out and goes in and out with him. I'll read you the parentheses only because it's so amazing. The Rashal erases this. He makes it into some sort of like tefillin and he ties it around his arms. He eliminates that. But it's amazing that this would be found in the Gemara, that they would have to put the Sefer Torah. He'd have to wrap it around his arm like tefillin. Right, that the gear says eliminated. It's not going to take the Sefer Torah into the bathhouse. Not into the bathroom. That he has with him and he can read it. He has to carry it on a place that he has to read it, that he could read it. The only place he can't read it in a Berach HaMechatz, he can't read it in a Beit HaKisei, therefore he's not required to have it there. Right, just quickly over here, to just note, the Rosh has a very famous Shita here, about Ketivat Sefer Torah. With the mitzvah Ketivat Sefer Torah, the Rosh says that today, since today, nobody learns from a Sefer Torah, and the whole purpose of the mitzvah is to learn from a Sefer Torah. Today, we do not have the mitzvah is transferred, and is transferred to being buying Sfarim. If you buy Sfarim, which you learn from, you're mekayim the mitzvah of Ketivat Sefer Torah, according to the Rosh. Right, the Beit Yosef takes issue with the Rosh. Says, how could you ever change a mitzvah of Ketivat Sefer Torah into purchasing of Sfarim? So he rereads the Rosh, and the Rosh says that in addition, that it's two mitzvot. It's a mitzvah right, Sefer Torah, but it's an additional mitzvah, maybe today Derabbanan, to also purchase Sfarim, to learn for those Sfarim, to mekayim the Tam HaMitzvah. But the mitzvah itself still stands. Shulchan Aruch, he brings down both. He brings down, first of all, there's a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. And he says, hey, now there's also an additional mitzvah, which sounds like a mitzvah Derabbanan, to buy Sfarim. Over there, the Drisha takes issue with the Shulchan Aruch's interpretation of the Rosh. It's not what the Rosh says, that it's both. He says either, the Rosh says in place of Sefer Torah. It's Machlokas Taz and Shach. Right, the Taz says that the Beit Yosef is right. The Shach says the Rosh is right, and not like the Beit Yosef, and that you can buy Sfarim and that's enough. The Aruch HaShulchan brings this down that the Tam, even with the Tam is Batel, that the mitzvah should still exist. And how could you have it be that it doesn't work there? The Torah Tmima actually mentions just as quickly, which is an amazing thing. Why is it that if you have a Sefer Torah, and one of the questions that the Aruch Shulchan brings up and others bring up is that if you already have a Sefer Torah from your father, why do you have to write an additional one? If the whole reason for the mitzvah is to learn, then why do you have to physically write it? What's the mitzvah to write it? Right? Then you should just be able to learn from it. Why is there a requirement? So you could say that Rav only applies, that's one way to deal with it, Rav only applies to a king. And not to Hejoto. That's a very difficult way to read the Gemara. The way to read the Gemara is that every person has to write a Sefer Torah. It's not unique to the king. If that's the case, you know what the Torah Tamima says, and I think this is it, is there are two different mitzvot. One mitzvah is the proliferation of Sefer Torah. We want to ensure there are more and more Sefer Torah around and in the world, and therefore, there's a requirement for you to write your own Sefer Torah. There's a second issue, which is, the issue of learning. The issue of learning, you'll be Mekayim even with your father's Sefer Torah. But the issue of writing a Torah, proliferation of Torah, that can only be accomplished, by the writing of a new Sefer Torah. All right, so now, Amar Marzutra, Itay Mar Ukva, B'tchila, Nitna Torah Yisrael, B'Ktav Ivri, Lashon HaKodesh. Originally, the Torah was given in the Ktav Ivri and in Lashon HaKodesh. Chazrav Nitna Lehem B'mei Ezra, B'Ktav Ashrit, V'Lashon Arami. In the time of Ezra, they changed it and they gave it in the Lashon Ashrit, and, Ktav Ashrit, what we have today, the block letters, and Aramit. Biru Lehem Yisrael, Ktav Ashrit, V'Lashon HaKodesh. They chose the block writing and Lashon HaKodesh, which is what we have today in our Sefer Torah. B'niach Lehed Yotot, Ktav Ivrit, V'Lashon Arami. And they left for the others, the Ktav Ivri and the Shonarmi. Man Hejodot, who is that left to? Rav Chisda Kutai. That's left to Kutai, who speak the language of Aramit. My Ktav Ivrit. What is the Ktav Ivrit? I'm Rav Chisda Ktav Libona. Rashi says, Libona is Utiot Gdolot, they're big letters. Tosos takes issue with that, Lon Hira, because it says not, that's not what it is, but rather it's a place. There's a certain location that wrote in this manner the Ktav Ivrit. So Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Roya Ezra, Shinatena Torah Yadol Yisrael. Ezra could have been like Moshe Rabbeinu, had the Torah given to him. Yomalei, Kadmo Moshe, had Moshe not come before him. Moshe Omer, Moshe Allah Elokim, Moshe went up to God. Ezra Omer, who? Ezra Allah mi Bavel. Malia Amur Kan Torah, Afli Amur Halan Torah. Moshe, who Omer, by Moshe, says, Voti Tzivashem Beit Eilulam, Meidet Chem Chukim Mushpatim, to teach you the Torah. Ezra Omer, Ki, Heichin, Ezra, Levavo, Lidroshe Torah Hashem, Lasot Ulamed Yisrael, Chuki, Chok Umishpat. Right, Vavapish Lonitna Torah Yado, even though the Torah was not given by him. Nevertheless, the writing, the letters that we use were changed by him. Because it says in Ezra, writing that was used over here, Katuv Aramit, was the writing of Aramit, Umutugam Aramit, and was written in Aramaic and in the Aramaic language. Nobody could interpret or read the writing on the wall in the time of Belshazzar that was written on the wall. That you write this Torah. Right, so that it's a writing that could be changed. So you see over here in the time of Ezra, there was some sort of change in language. How do you know there's a change in language? Because in Daniel, you see that Belshazzar cannot read what's on the walls. So he can't read on the walls is because they changed the language, they changed the writing. And who was the one that was the writing was changed? You see over here, the Aramit, in the time of Ezra, was that there was the change from Aramit, right? From, they were trying to say, Lashon HaKodesh, Aramit, and Ktav Ivri to Ktav Ashurit. And that change is what caused the inability of the king to read it. But Daniel, because of his knowledge of Torah, was able to read that writing. And therefore we see, even though the Torah didn't come from Ezra, it changed Al Yado, and that was already hinted to in the Torah, because it's Mishneh Torah, Torah Shenishtana, the Torah that will change. Okay, we'll stop over here.